Members, we will call the meeting, this meeting of the House Commerce Committee to order. We do not yet have a quorum, so we will wait to act on the minutes from the last meeting. We are doing, today is the first liquor day, and we're looking at a bunch of omnibus liquor bills. Everything today, we're not voting on anything today. Everything will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill that will be coming later. And with that, we'll jump right into it. Representative Neuberger, welcome to the committee. And as always, the motto here in commerce is brevity is our friend.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Sanders, do you want to move Representative Neuberger's bill?
So moved, Mr. Please. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Sanders. So we have House File 86 before the committee. Representative Neuberger, tell us why you're here and why it's a good bill.
Well, I'm here today, Mr. Chair. We have a real fine golf course in the city of Becker that has had over the years a number of real nice restaurants in it. At this time, there isn't a restaurant in the golf course. The golf course is an integral part of our community, and we have a lot of summer events there. We have events going all year round, pretty much. And what we're looking to do is we're still going to keep the golf course in business, but just at this time, we'd like to continue to serve wine and beer and spirits for all of the events that are going to be scheduled for the summer. And with that, we're just seeking for a special license for the city of Becker. And with me, I've brought some representatives here on behalf of the city of Becker that can give you the quick rundown.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Neuberger. Gentlemen, if you want to go ahead, identify yourselves for the record, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Greg Pruszynski. I'm the city administrator in Becker. I appreciate the time to come down and approach you. We are looking for favorable support for House File 86. We have had a restaurant there and would appreciate the support for the licensing, something that we think is critical for our city. We think it's a great amenity for our community and would appreciate the support. So,
thank you. Go ahead.
Troy Malo, Director of Golf for the City of Becker. Again, appreciate the opportunity to come down and dress today. And it's an integral part to the operation, and we're just looking to be able to control it in-house with as we move forward, so we can keep offering the service for our guests that come out to play golf. So
that sounds good to us. Members, any questions? Pretty straightforward. Gentlemen, we appreciate it. We're not going to vote on it, but that's not a bad sign. We're going to lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill. Thank you very much. Thank you, Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, members.
Representative Atkins. Representative Atkins is here with House File 469.
Mr. Chair, I'd move House File 469 for potential inclusion in the liquor omnibus bill. Very simply, we want to open a distillery at our golf course and start a farm winery. These guys didn't know that. This is Mayor George Turvel, who I had the...
I have an amendment for the distribution rights for the golf course.
Mayor Turvel and I had the pleasure of serving on the city council together for 10 years, and to his right is Matt Monahan, who's running the golf course at Inverwood. And they will walk you through kind of what the game plan is. I don't think you're going to hear a lot of dissimilarities between what we and the city of Becker are looking to do. Gentlemen?
Thank you, Joel. Ours, I guess, ditto, Mayor Turvel, Mayor George Turvel, Invergrove Heights. And our request is pretty much the same as Becker. Probably the number one request that we have is to be able to serve liquor at the golf course. I don't mean to make liquor and golf always go together, but apparently it's a big request.
Apparently you've never seen me golf.
So it serves as an excuse, depending on how much you drink. So anyway.
It never interferes with my golfing.
Not a lot of difference. We find it to be a, it's being asked for by the people that participate at the golf course. We do not have a restaurant. We serve the hot dogs and the small food items. We take a look at it that it would allow us, golf has become more and more competitive with more and more golf courses in relationship to revenue, and it's a request that we'd like to serve the clients. Anything, Matt, that...
Nope. Sounds good. George hit it right on the head.
Sounds good to me. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Representative Dean has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question. Do you anticipate that tee times will back up a little bit more at the end of the day with people golfing a little slower?
No, I do not.
Thank you, Representative Dean. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the mayor. So I understand that there was some damage control that you had to do when you took over the city of Invergrove Heights, and there was the previous mayor left it in quite a disarray. And how long did it really take your city to recover to be such a great city?
I think we're about done with questions.
Now today.
Mr. Mayor. Recovering. Always recovering. But Joe did a great job as a mayor, and he's doing a great job representing us as our representative in the House. So.
Mr. Mayor,
thank you for the question.
Mr. Mayor, good answer. Members, any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Atkins will renew his, well, we'll just lay over House File 469 for inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill.
Mr. Chairman, I think all of the media folks are here to talk about the liquor license at the golf course. So you guys probably are going to want to talk to Channel. Oh, yes, they're probably going to line up.
That's what I was assuming.
Is it? I think Matt is looking at adding growlers to the.
That's an out in the hall conversation. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Representative Atkins. I will go next. Representative O'Driscoll, you want to be in charge?
Mr. Chair, welcome to the committee. It's been like 10 seconds since I saw you last. How have things been?
Things have been well. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move House File 1118 for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill. And real simply, this is a bill that would allow the state fair to have brew pub sales there if they should so desire. And I do have a testifier who knows way more than I do about the issue.
Well, your testifier identify himself for the record and begin his testimony when he's ready.
Sure. Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1118. My name is Dan Schwartz, and I'm with the Lithbridge Brewing Company in Stillwater, Minnesota. I'm also the president of the Minnesota Craft Brewers Guild. We were founded in 2000 with the goal of promoting Minnesota craft beer and educating people about our industry. As an organization, we want to support industry-specific legislation that helps our membership grow their businesses and compete in the marketplace. The Guild's membership includes brew pubs, microbreweries, and regional breweries. The Guild continues to grow each year, and we now have more than 68 members, member breweries here in Minnesota. House File 1118 before you today is the Guild's top legislative priority for this legislative session. And we all know that the Minnesota State Fair was created as a venue where agricultural producers and manufacturers from across the state could come together to showcase their products. That tradition remains vibrant today, but unfortunately the law limits brew pubs to only selling at venues they own and prevents these small businesses from participating in the fair's 12 days of festivities. The Guild believes that it's illogical that brew pubs would be excluded from promoting their products at the Great Minnesota Get-Together alongside other brewers. House File 1118 would allow Minnesota brew pubs to distribute through licensed wholesalers to the state fair. Minnesota craft brewers have built a truly entrepreneurial industry composed of small, locally owned businesses whose growth benefits Minnesota communities. Please support our industry by removing this barrier and allowing brew pubs the same opportunity as breweries to display their products at the state fair. And on behalf of the Minnesota Craft Brewers Guild, I thank you for your time and appreciate your support.
Mr. Schwartz, thank you for your testimony. Members, questions for Mr. Schwartz? Seeing none, the next testifier, Mr. Joe Bagnoli.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Joe Bagnoli with the McGrann Shea Law Firm on behalf of the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association and Minnesota Municipal Beverage Association. Before I begin, I just want to say Dan Schwartz here is not just a guy who works at Lithbridge. Apologize. Lithbridge. He founded it, worked his tail off, and created it. And it produces, if you haven't drank the beer, fabulous beer. It is a great place, and he is a great part of the craft brewing tradition here in Minnesota. I'm testifying today neutral on this bill. We believe that what this represents is a significant departure from current law. Under current law, there are two types of companies that produce beer with two different types of regulatory schemes that provide different benefits depending on which type of company a brewer elects to be. This bill changes the rules that govern brew pubs. A brew pub is a restaurant with a little brewery within it. The brew pub can sell beer they produce on site. Additionally, it can sell other brewers' beer as well as wine and spirits. Finally, they can move beer they own to other restaurants they also own. A company that chooses to be a brew pub cannot sell its product anywhere than the facility it owns. Thus, by allowing a brew pub to sell at the state foyer represents a departure from the current law. We are neutral on this bill because the uniqueness of the state fair, as Mr. Schwartz mentioned, and because of the assurances from the Brewers Guild that this doesn't represent a wholesale desire to change the laws governing brew pubs. The state fair is a very unique institution in our state. It only lasts 12 days, and it's a place where the best of Minnesota is displayed, sampled, and purchased. Currently, the Brewers Guild has a space at the fair where the public can obtain samples. You may have read about it. They had a little unfortunate incident with some criminals, frankly, knocking it over and stealing some money. But it's a great location where the brewers of Minnesota can show their wares, be sampled, promote it. It's really a terrific place. As explained to us, the desire of this language by the craft brewers is to allow those who make beer and brew pubs to be able to show their wares at this location. While we are concerned any time that there is an exception to well-settled regulatory structure, because of the narrowness of this exception, the uniqueness of the state fair, and the craft guild's assurance that they only seek to sell the beer at the fair at this one location that other brewers currently provide their beer, we currently are neutral and do not oppose this legislation.
Members, questions for the testifier? Representative Dean?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and a question to the author and the testifier. So this would only be at the craft brewers section at the horticulture building. It wouldn't allow a craft brewer to purchase a booth and start selling their own, you know, beer in a standalone booth.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dean. That is correct.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First question and a comment. First is a question you may not have the answer to today, but maybe you can find out. Do we know what quantity is being served now at the Minnesota State Fair since we, not with respect to you, but the change we made, 5 years ago now, in terms of Minnesota brews that are being served at the State Fair? Mr. Bagnoli, is that something you know off the top of your head?
Mr. Bagnoli.
Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, it is not something I know off the top of my head. Mr. Schwartz might know how many breweries participate at the state fair. As to volume that's sold, I don't know. I think we could provide that. It turns out I also represent the Minnesota State Fair, and they keep pretty careful track of how much is served for their own purposes. So I think we could find that number.
Mr. Schwartz?
Yeah, I can say that the Craft Brewers Guild did have over 40 breweries sell beer at our booth. I don't know what the total quantity was at that booth or the state fair in general, but a lot of breweries were represented there.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And gentlemen, I appreciate it. I actually, in 2009, when I was at the state fair, I had a fellow who was actually giving him a hard time about only serving Wisconsin beers, and here we are at the Minnesota State Fair. And he said, yeah, there's a law that prevents us from doing it. We can't serve Minnesota beers. And he goes, I wish I knew somebody who could change that. And I said, you know, it just so happens I know a guy. And the following year we were able to change it. But since then I haven't followed up in terms of the volume that's been served. I'm just curious how much Minnesota-based or Minnesota-brewed beers are being served at the Minnesota State Fair. It'd be interesting to know that.
Yeah. Representative Atkins, that's a good question. I don't know either. We can find out. I can tell you anecdotally, I go to the state fair a couple of times a year. It is crowded. You have trouble getting in there every time I've been there. And I'm old, so I don't go in the evening. You know, this is an afternoon crowd, and I have to imagine in the evening it's just as crowded, if not more so. I think it's been a resounding success.
Mr. Chair, I'm just glad you said it was the afternoon. I thought you were heading there already first thing in the morning. There's one type of beer, though. Is it the cotton candy stuff or whatever?
Mini donut beer.
That's it. That you got to get there right away in the morning, right?
I've heard.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We appreciate your support.
We do have some more member questions. Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hoppe, I support your effort, and I think it's great. Just what are some of the I just want your advice on what are the best combinations, and so is it mini donuts with the Minnesota beer, or is it the corn dog, or is it what's your strategy on
Mr. Chair?
Representative, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lilly, that's the beauty of the state fair. You have to go figure this out for yourself. There are millions of possible combinations. You can go with the corn dog and beer, the mini donuts and beer. It's really up to you.
Representative Lilly?
I'm fine. I'm good. Thank you. That's good advice. Well taken.
Representative Lilly, it sounds like you're anticipating the state fair. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know the milk producers, for 50 cents, you can drink all you want all day. What are your plans on pricing this out? I am very interested.
If we could listen very carefully to Representative Hoppe's response to this. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Sundin. While I would consider that a friendly amendment, I'm not sure that that would be okay with the fair or with the brewers. But I appreciate the spirit.
Oh, I got that.
Mr. Chair, I would just note, just for folks who know, and I can't remember if it was under Chair Atkins or Chair Hoppe, it's kind of gone back and forth the last couple of years. At the Minnesota Fair and at every professional sports location, a number of years ago, we put language in that requires that at least one tap on every tap has to be Minnesota breweries, has to be a Minnesota beer. So it doesn't fence any of the outsiders out, but it allows for Minnesota beer to have at least one draft on each of the taps.
Seeing no other member questions, anyone from the public wishing to offer comment today? Seeing no one come down, Mr. Schwartz, we will give you the last word on the measure in front of us today. Mr. Schwartz.
I just want to thank everybody for considering the bill, and thanks for your support.
Thank you, Mr. Schwartz. We will lay the bill up for possible inclusion, and we do have a quorum at this time.
Mr. Chair, members.
We do have a quorum at this time. Representative Sundin, have you had a chance to look at the minutes from the meeting of March 3rd and ask you to move approval?
Yeah, I've read them twice, actually, and they look good, and I move approval.
Minutes have been moved by Representative Sundin. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion carries. Our next bill is House File 1295. Representative Sanders, welcome to the committee. And if you identify, if you'd like to move your bill for possible inclusion, and begin with your testimony when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move House File 1293 to be laid over possible inclusion in the Liquor Omnibus Bill, or to be the Liquor Omnibus Bill. The bill does some things, doesn't do some other things. It's a good bill. I hope you guys will support it.
Representative Sanders, thank you.
It's like purely technical.
Yeah. And it looks like we have statutes. It looks like you brought a testifier along to help unpuzzle some of the things.
Mr.
Chairman? Mr. Case?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jeff Case, and I work in the Revisor of Statutes. This bill is the result of a provision in last year's liquor bill, which directed the revisor to prepare legislation in consultation with House Research and Senate Counsel recodifying licensing statutes for brew pubs, small brewers, and other providers of alcohol. Suffice it to say, it's a technical bill. There were no substantive changes. It was vetted with the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association, Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division of Department of Public Safety, the Minnesota Craft Brewers Guild, the League of Minnesota Cities, and the Minnesota Beer Wholesalers Association. And the prime thing we wanted to do was break existing law into smaller statutes with subdivisions and headnotes so that the law is easier to locate, cite, and amend.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chairman, I was going to ask, I told Representative Davids here, I had a series of questions section by section, and then I realized this was the bill I passed last year. Directing this to be done. So thank you very much would be my comment. Actually, is this, Mr. Chairman, just as we should have a nice walkthrough, is this likely to be the vehicle bill for the omnibus? Is that what we're anticipating?
Either this one or the other one, but I think it's probably this one. This makes the most sense. Well, I was going to say either this one or the other Sanders bill, but I think it's probably this one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions, members? Mr. Case, anything else? Representative Sanders, anything else? Seeing no other questions, we will lay this bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill. Thank you.
Which one are the other Sanders?
Representative Sanders, do you want to go ahead and move House File 1293?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we just did that one.
Oh, sorry, 1090.
Good. So we'll do recommend 1090 be laid over for possible inclusion in the liquor omnibus bill. This bill is a little more substantive than the last one, but what it does is say that on Sunday, those that have an on-sale license are able to move their the time allotted to sell alcohol to 8 a.m. instead of 10 a.m., which is current law. So for all those places offering brunch or, again, in general, that has an on-sale license, allowing them to sell Bloody Marys or mimosas, so that's why we're calling this the Bloody Mary Bill, henceforth. So with that, we'll stand for any questions. We also have a couple testifiers here today.
Why don't we go ahead and hear from the testifiers, if that's okay? Please identify yourself for the record and start when you're ready.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Cynthia Gertis, and my husband and I started a restaurant downtown called Hell's Kitchen 13 years ago. And somehow, I'm Puerto Rican, so I was never called Cindy. My name is Sin, and I am Sin from Hell, seriously. Somehow we've thrived. Our restaurant has thrived. We now have 152 employees, and our sales will reach $8 million this year. Last fall, we jacked up our regular Bloody Mary, and we decided to do a 35-foot Bloody Mary bar. And I was doing the signs on my Photoshop, and I realized now I have to do a sign for two different starting times. And that started the ball rolling, where I called Minnesota Restaurant Association and asked, why are we not allowed to sell alcohol at the same time on weekends? So I'm here in support of HF 1090, that we move one number in this entire wording, that alcohol sales be allowed on Sundays as well as Saturdays, which they already are, from 10 a.m. back to 8 a.m. We call it the Bloody Mary Law, not to shill my Bloody Mary bar, but actually because so many people come and this is their only cocktail they have, they're not rolling out of a bar into our restaurant. They're sitting there with their families or after a bridal, after a wedding the night before, or getting ready for a Vikings or a Twins game, and they just want a Bloody Mary or they just want a drink. And the biggest thing that I've noticed is customers, because we serve 40% of our customers are from out of town, and out of state, they're incredulous. They just look at us, and their first word is, what? I mean, they're not even being snarly. They're just saying, I don't think I heard you right. And then we have to explain that, yeah, we still have a law that's been on the books for over 100 years. So I promise if you can support this, I'm hoping we've got bipartisan support. I promise if you can support HF 1090, I won't see you for another 111 years.
Welcome, sir. Welcome to the committee. Please start whenever you're ready and identify yourself for the tape.
Yeah, my name is Tom Frederick. I'm from Mankato. I own Pub 500 down there. We've been serving guests in the Mankato City Center since about 2003. We employ 45 people. We serve breakfast on Saturdays and Sundays. Saturday guests can have a Bloody Mary, craft beer, or cocktail starting at 8 a.m., and currently the Sunday only allows us to start at 10. Minnesota is the state of hockey. Mike Marauders, a local insurance agent team of 40 to 50-year-olds, have games on 8 a.m. on Sunday morning. By 9:15, they're hungry and thirsty, and they come in for breakfast. We make them wait 45 minutes to get their Bloody Mary. Last weekend, our number 2-ranked MSU Mavericks played the number 3-ranked Michigan Tech team with the WCHA title on the line. A couple people came into town for the game, like we were packed. On Sunday morning, our bartenders and servers had to explain to three different groups that the laws of Minnesota allow serving at 10 a.m. only. We are a Gold Star establishment in Mankato, which recognizes our responsible alcohol serving tactics. This isn't about getting alcohol to anybody who shouldn't have it. A Bloody Mary, mimosa, or one of those coffee-infused Minnesota craft beers goes very well with a nice breakfast. A consistent serving time would be easier for our servers, bartenders, and guests, without any risk to public safety. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee, for your time. I can answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Frederick. We appreciate it. And I would support what both of the testifiers have said. My daughter is a volleyball player, and the parents of this volleyball team are, most of them are okay. I'll tell you later the ones that aren't. But we have been in 10 or 11 different states, and I think Minnesota is the only state where we've run into this issue. So I think it's a great idea. Questions, members? Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to let you know that before 10 in the morning on Sundays, you can get something to drink at church. I advise you to stop by there.
Representative Lunan, I noticed I didn't see you at Saturday night mass, but I prayed for you. It's okay. Anybody else in the audience want to come down? Anybody want to speak for or against the bill? Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and so Representative Sanders, and to your testifiers, I just want to make sure I understood. So this change would make the laws more customer and consumer friendly, correct? And the laws haven't been changed since prohibition was ended in the state of Minnesota. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, yes, as our previous testifier said, it's been on the books for over 100 years.
And
Representative Loon.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Sanders, I think I heard your testifier say that there's no public safety implications to this change in the law as well.
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We don't believe so, as you already can currently buy alcohol on sale premises on Saturday mornings at 8 a.m.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Loon. Other questions, members? Not seeing any. Thank you very much to the both of the testifiers. Thank you, Representative Sanders. And we will hold over this bill for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill. House File 1090. Next up, Representative Anderson, House File 70. Representative Anderson, do you want to go at the same time as Representative Swidzinski? Okay. Representative Swidzinski, if you want to go up, and we'll do both of these bills together. House File 70 and House File 121 are very similar bills, and I'll let either one of you, I guess you can move your own bills, and we'll hold both of those over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move House File 70, bringing up Chris Swidzinski, Representative Swidzinski here, because since he's already had a bill pass out of Commerce Committee, I'm hoping his luck rubs off on me. Okay. Yes, there we go. So what we have here is this would allow for the sales of growlers on Sundays. Minnesota is experiencing a boom right now in Sunday in craft brewers across the state of Minnesota. You can go to Lucan, where Growl Brothers started off. You can go to Duluth. You can go to Minnetonka, all across the state of Minnesota, and find these microbreweries, these craft breweries, doing a fantastic job of bringing in new jobs to the state of Minnesota. The only problem that the one thing you can't do, though, is you can't buy a growler on Sunday. So, for example, this last weekend I went out to see the ice caves up in the Wisconsin area. And we like to go to Fitker's Brewery. It's a great brewery. They have a wonderful oatmeal stout. However, we didn't get to the Duluth area until Sunday. We happened to go through the Wisconsin side on Saturday to get our way up there. But on Sunday, we weren't able to stop and get a growler. And that's unfortunate because we're missing out on a opportunity to support a business here in the state of Minnesota. And I think it's a huge a disservice to these business owners that have done a great job in promoting our state. And that's why I'd like to see this change. So that's my impetus. I do have some testifiers, Mr. Chair.
Representative Swidzinski, do you want to make some opening comments and then we'll get into the testifiers?
Sure. Mr. Chair, do you want me to move my bill as well? Or
yeah, just why don't we move your bill as well?
House File 120 or 121 before the committee for possible inclusion.
Got it. Thank
and,
you.
And, you know, I just want Representative Anderson did a great job talking about really the unique aspect of rural breweries and the fact that folks do often travel, whether it be South Dakota, North Dakota, Iowa, or Wisconsin during their travels and may run into an opportunity to stop in at one of our rural entrepreneurs that are opening up a brewery business in rural Minnesota. And really, this is this bill, the impetus of this is to really expand the opportunity to bring beer across the state and back home so you can share it with your friends or just enjoy it for the rest of the week. This is not an expansion of Sunday sales. It's a different breed. We're not selling bottles. We're selling growlers, and I would appreciate your consideration.
Thank you, Representative Swidzinski. Representative Anderson, you've got a couple of amendments. Do you want to do those first or testifiers first? Whatever is your preference.
Let's do the amendments first, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
And Does it matter to you which order the amendments go in?
Whichever one you want to do first, Mr. Chair.
Why don't we do the A15 amendment first?
The A95?
Yeah.
So, Mr. Chair and members, what this amendment does, and I do have testifiers to this amendment specifically, if that's helpful, this allows for growler sales on at brew pub facilities. We want to make sure that the language is clear that brew pubs would also be able to do this.
Okay.
So, for example, Northbound, Fin Whiskers, all of those different brew pubs that we have across the state, the Fickers and whatnot, they would be able to sell growlers as well.
Okay, why don't we do this? Why don't we have your testifiers to this amendment come down right now, and we'll go with that. So Representative Anderson moves the A15-0095 amendment. Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chair, members, there's a technical amendment that should be made to this. It's on page 1, line 22. It should say off-sale malt liquor, and so you would strike the S on liquors and insert malt after off sale. And that, members, that's also the gist of the next amendment, the A1, which would make that same change to the body of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. McCormick. Members, does everyone have that change? Okay, so we can just incorporate that, Mr. McCormick. All right, Representative Anderson, why don't you have your testifier go ahead. Welcome back.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify. My name is Dan Schwartz, again, from the Liftbridge Brewing Company in Stillwater and the Minnesota Craft Brewers Guild. So I just wanted to testify on behalf of House File 70 in the amendment. As a craft brewery who has a tap room and is open on Sundays, we have a lot of tourists in town, and we are open on Sundays, and we do tours, and many times customers ask to take growlers home, and we cannot do that. In fact, we had an angry customer last week. We did a Groupon, which allowed somebody to get a growler as part of it, and they came in on Sunday, and we could not allow them to take their Groupon. They were pretty disappointed about that, even though we made it clear that that's the current rule. So this would certainly help with tourism. Since the breweries are already open, we'd be able to make use of our time a little bit better and sell the same products that we sell during the rest of the week.
Thank you, Mr. Schwartz. Members, any questions? Not seeing any. Okay. Do you have somebody else that wants to testify to the amendment, Representative Anderson? Is there anyone that wants to speak from the crowd that wants to speak for or against the amendment? Welcome, sir. Whenever you're ready, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman, Committee. Andrew Schmidt with Minnesota Beer Activists, testifying in support of the Sunday Growler Amendment. It's a step in the right direction, I think, in terms of consumer availability and supporting Minnesota producers and off-sale retailers. As consumers, I think it's a nice step. It'd be nice if it supported all consumers and all off-sale retailers in Minnesota. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Members, any questions? Representative Sundin.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair, on both of these bills here. It just seems that we're selecting out these growler producers. I've never seen a growler. I didn't even know what a growler is. But we're setting aside something special. It's inconsistent with the rest of the Sunday liquor sales, and I simply can't support any of this due to that reason. If we're going to pass laws, they should be consistent throughout an industry. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sundin. Representative Loon.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. In light of Representative Sundin's comment on that, I wondered if maybe Mr. McCormick or one of the nonpartisan staff wanted to talk about the types of off-sale that is allowed in Minnesota on Sundays currently. And I'm thinking about wineries and other things.
Mr. McCormick, do you want to give us a tutorial?
Madam Chair, members, currently if you go to a farm winery on a Sunday, you can purchase the product made at the farm winery. Currently, you can purchase 3.2 beer on Sundays at a grocery store or a number of other retail outlets. Those are the two main ones off the top of my head.
Representative Loon, is that... Representative Loon.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to, I thought it was important to raise a point that, you know, there is allowance of off-sale. It's just not a complete allowance of off-sale. So I thought it was important for the debate. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Loon. Well stated. Other Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this would be to Representative Swazinski. You had mentioned rural craft brewers. I'm assuming this applies to urban craft brewers as well.
Representative Swazinski.
Chair Hoppe, Representative Dean, absolutely. Yes, indeed. Yes.
Representative Dean, good question, good clarification. Members, other questions to the amendment? Seeing none. Anybody else in the audience want to speak for or against the amendment? Not seeing anyone else coming down. Come on down.
Mr. Chair.
Please proceed whenever you're ready.
My name is Kristen Merritt. I'm from Buffalo, Minnesota. I'm a 38-year-old professional woman. I do not drink beer, but I do enjoy drinking wine. I enjoy the wine culture and the events and food associated with wine. I would be very excited to support the passing of this bill should it include beer and wine and spirits. But as it stands with the sole focus on growler sales, I'm not in favor of the bill. It does not feel equitable to me as someone who does not enjoy beer that those who drink beer would now be able to purchase beer on Sunday to take with them to their events, to take with them to enjoy with family, while I would not be able to do the same with wine. Having the ability to purchase beer on Sunday via growlers does not meet my needs. As a professional, I work Monday through Friday. While I currently work from the home, up until about 7 months ago, like most, I commuted to and from the office. That left Saturday and Sunday as my days to run errands, including purchasing wine for whatever event I had on the agenda. Not being able to purchase wine on Sunday makes that much more complicated. Again, I would be very much in support of passing the bill that was equitable to all and included beer, wine, and liquor, but I am not in favor of I'm not in favor of only meeting the needs of a specific population.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nice job. Well said. Representative Kreisha.
Thank you. Just a quick question, and maybe Mr. McCormick, is a growler, is it specific to the beer, or is it the container?
Mr. McCormick?
Madam Chair, members, a growler is a term of art for beer, and under current law, a brew pub or small brewer can sell either a growler or a 750-milliliter bottle during the hours of allowed sale.
Thank you, Mr. McCormick. Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the two authors, and I'm not trying to make this a pointed question or a gotcha question, but to the testifier's point, how would you distinguish, and frankly to Representative Loon's point, how would you distinguish what you're attempting to do here with why perhaps we wouldn't be supportive of Representative Loon's full Sunday sales, or to the testifier's point, why not open it up to wine and liquor products? Can either one of you draw the distinction?
Who wants Representative Anderson?
Well, we can.
Or Representative Swazinski, or both?
I would like to comment
sure.
as well.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, I think you know the unique discussion about a growler and what a growler is and how it's sealed. I mean, you talk about a large cork. You know, it's in statute of how that is done. And I think there's still a lot of debate from a size standpoint when you talk about alcohol consumption from a growler, from a beer, like how much liquor would potentially be in that, the spirit, if you're talking about spirits. I think there's a lot of debate out there on, you know a percentage of alcohol versus all. I think that's just the general, what I've heard of some of the debate of what's going on, of why maybe that's not been moved forward as quickly. I don't know if there's a bill being drafted upon talking about spirits, but I think there's still a lot of question behind, you know, is that a sealed, you know, bottle? Is that something, you know, because you can't get a growler at a liquor store. And that was a lot of debate last year with some of the Teamsters and stuff talking about why this bill kind of got pushed to the side. It's essentially, why is a growler unique? Is because you can't get it anywhere else than a brewery.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
I think it's no secret that I support Sunday sales completely. And that's the ultimate Representative Loon's bill. I would love to see that happen. Given the dynamics of what's been taking place at the legislature, if that doesn't happen, my fallback is the Growler bill. Because at a minimum, we should be able to provide the same opportunities to these craft brewers that we're already providing to the farm wineries in the state, where people can go to a winery on a Sunday and take home a bottle of wine in the state of Minnesota. I would like to be able to offer that same opportunity to the many, many different craft brewers that we have here in the state of Minnesota. Whether it's Indeed, 612, whether it's Brow Brothers, whether it's Tin Whiskers, Northbound, there's, you know, oodles and oodles of these brewers across the state. And I think that we are missing out on a huge opportunity of tourism for our state, because this is not just limited to Minnesota. The craft brewery industry is booming, and we happen to be a magnet right now because we are the fresh ones in the market, and we're missing out on an opportunity to give these businesses the leg up, the support that they need to be successful and thrive here for a very long time. And that's my ultimate goal, and I would hope that we can get this passed.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Anderson and Studzinski. I believe, if I'm right, by the way, we're the second fastest craft brewing state in the country, and the Explore Minnesota folks will verify that it's bringing in tons of tourists. So, Representative Anderson and or Swedzinski, why not just, you know, the three-tier system is something maybe, well, I'm guessing that most people in this room probably know what it is. The average person probably doesn't. Why not just chuck it all together? I mean, if we go down the path that you're, and again, I'm not looking, this isn't a pointed, I'm not trying to cross-examine you, but with the point that you made is why draw the lines anymore? Would you just assume, and maybe that's the next bill, I haven't looked all the way down, but that we just throw the doors wide open and not have the three-tier system at all?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, I get constant emails and contact from my constituents that are looking for this opportunity. We are finding more and more people that are becoming beer connoisseurs. And I view this as an opportunity for them to not only support local businesses here in the state of Minnesota, but also for a right for them to purchase it on a Sunday. And that's kind of the view that I have it. I don't go beyond that. I am just looking at for this bill, this growler, that this is a great way for us to respond to the demands of our constituents that are asking for this. Not just this, but also overall Sunday sales. But I see this as the right step in the right direction.
Thanks. Mr. Chair, thank you. And thank you, Representative Anderson.
Thank you. Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, Representative Anderson made my point that you, just like this bill proposes to be able to buy a quantity of beer at certain locations, you already can buy wine at farm wineries, so it is already negated. And I was impressed at how many brand names that you knew.
I'm not going to admit to anything, Mr. Chair.
We're all one big confessional here. It doesn't matter. Okay, seeing no other questions, thank you, Representative Lunan. We will go ahead and vote on the A150095 amendment to House File 70 as technically amended by Mr. McCormick's words earlier. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Anderson, thank you. Should we go on to the A1 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Or do we not need to do that because it was covered by the first one?
I think we need to adopt that first. We need to.
Mr. Kleeman or Mr. McCormick?
You need to adopt it.
Okay. Mr. McCormick says we should go ahead and adopt the A1 amendment, which, members, it's a short one-line amendment, essentially does what we just spent a few minutes talking about. Any questions on this amendment? Seeing none. Oh, Representative Dean.
As I look at line 1.14, it doesn't appear that liquors, plural, appears at any point on that.
We'll let Mr. McCormick tackle that.
Madam Chair, members, on line 1.14, it says except that off-sale malt, except that off-sale liquors may be sold. And we're replacing that with except that off-sale malt liquor may be sold. No. This change comes from the Department of Public Safety. Madam Chair, this is page 1, line 14.
And Representative Dean, we're not. This won't apply to liquor. What it means to say is malt liquor instead of just to make sure it's included. But it's not hard liquor.
Mr. Chair, I certainly understand that. I'm just looking at what we just adopted as the A15, and the amendment now that we're putting on A15 doesn't seem to apply in the same way that it may have applied to the original.
The A1 amendment is to the bill itself, not to the amendment.
Oh. My bad.
Any other questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. So we have amended the bill twice. Representative Anderson, do you have anybody else that wants to speak in favor of the bill?
Don't.
As amendment?
No.
And is there anyone, Mr. Carlson, do you want to come down and speak? Come on down. And if there's anyone else that wants to speak for or against either one of these bills or both of these bills, please, folks, we want to hear from everybody. So we'll go ahead and start with Mr. Carlson and then go from there. Mr. Carlson, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Joel Carlson. Excuse me, for your record. I own all legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Wine and Spirits Wholesalers Association, our association which distributes a significant amount of the wine and spirits throughout the state of Minnesota, is a very strong proponent of the current system of alcohol regulations that we have in Minnesota, including the three-tier system. We believe that that system promotes fairness and public safety, and it has our support as it currently stands. Our association is opposed to these two particular measures, Mr. Chairman and members, for reasons stated by other witnesses and Representative Sundin. Off-sale sales are currently not allowed on Sundays, and further erosion of that regulation on a piecemeal basis we do not think is in the best interest of the system. And you can have a larger discussion about making Sunday sales open for all off-sale, but currently they're not allowed, and because some favored industries got that exemption doesn't mean that we need to continue going down that slippery slope and making it even worse. And so we do have that inequity even worse. So we do have concerns and opposition to this as it relates to the entire alcohol system of regulation, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Members, any questions? And we do have a couple of more. Yep. Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Come on down. And we do have a couple of more people that I didn't see on the list, and I didn't know, Representative Anderson, if these were your testifiers or not. But please go ahead and identify yourself for the record and start whenever you're ready.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chair. My name is Erin Ricken, and I'm from Richfield. I'm here. I love the amendment, but I wish we could take it a little further. I am a mom that's very concerned about my kids, and one of the things that I do is cook everything from scratch. We don't do any boxes, and we try to cut out all preservatives, which then means that I have to cook with liquor sometimes. A good example of not being able to have liquor that I need for a recipe happened a week ago for my son's birthday party. He wanted lava cakes before he wanted a banana cream pie. And in the lava cake recipe, I needed an orange liqueur, which I couldn't get, and the party was on a Sunday. So I literally had to drive to Wisconsin to go buy orange liqueur for a tablespoon for this recipe to make for my son. And I just wish we could extend this bill a little further, as a few other people have said, to cover all liquor sales, to kind of make my life a little bit easier and other people's life a little bit easier. And it's, in all fairness, if we're going to stretch it, we might as well cover all the bases. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Nice job testifying. Members, any questions? All right, we see. Come on down. Whenever you're ready, please identify yourself to the record for the record and start when you're ready. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm Tamara Kramer. Thank you, representatives, for the bills. I live in Prior Lake, and I'm the sole owner of a small specialty liquor store called Vom Voss in Mall of America. Every Sunday, which is the second busiest retail day of the week, customers come into my next door oil and vinegar shop asking why they can't go into the liquor store to buy something there. And I have to, of course, tell them that in Minnesota we can't sell liquor to them on Sundays. Sunday liquor sales of growlers is one small step toward catching up with national and state consumer and small business trends and opportunities, but it doesn't go far enough. More than half the population doesn't drink beer, and even fewer drink growlers due to preferences for wine or spirits or for health reasons such as celiac disease. Women in particular tend to prefer wine, specialty liqueurs, and spirits, and even regular beer over growlers. Spirits, wine, and beer are all intoxicating beverages. The alcohol content in 12 ounces of beer is the same as 5 ounces of wine and 1.5 ounces of spirits, and I have a little visual for that in case that's helpful. I don't understand why we'd have a law that gives preference for growlers, which are enjoyed by a relatively small, primarily male group of consumers, over every other form of liquor. Minnesota residents and visitors want to buy their adult beverage of choice in Minnesota on Sundays. I want to be able to sell my customers wine and spirits in my shop on Sundays. Doing so means about $50,000 to $100,000 in additional sales revenue to me, which would go a long way to make my little startup business a profitable long-term business. I just ask the committee to not take another baby step on this issue by limiting Sunday liquor sales to growlers. Instead, please allow us consumers and businesses to choose the Sunday liquor sales practices that make sense for us. And since there was so much interest earlier in pairing, I'm happy to talk to you about pairing scotch and food or brandy and food or oils and vinegars. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Ms. Kramer. We appreciate it. Members, any questions? Thank you. We had Kristen Merritt was also on the list, and I'm not sure if she tested. Okay, got it. Thank you. Just want to make sure we have everybody covered. Anybody else, Mr. Reynoso? Welcome back to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Edward Reynoso. I'm the political director and legislative director for Teamsters Joint Council 32. We represent in excess of 62,000 active and retired members in the state of Minnesota, of which over 850 of members work in the liquor industry. We work in the warehousing, distribution, and in some municipal liquor stores. All of our collective bargaining agreements have some sort of trigger mechanism that creates a mandatory reopening of a collective bargaining agreement in the event that there's a modification of Sunday off-sale liquor sales. We had an employer last year, as everybody knows, that believed that the expansion of growlers sales was in fact that trigger mechanism and stated that in the event of its passage that he would in fact look for a reopening of the contract. We disagreed with that employer then, and we continue to disagree with that employer now. That hasn't changed. But what has changed is that we're continuing a discussion with the employer, and we're optimistic and hopeful to reach a compromise sometime soon. Until such time, I can tell you that we continue to be opposed to any expansion of Sunday liquor sales in the state of Minnesota, which would also include Sunday growler sales. You know, Mr. Chair, yesterday somebody had mentioned to me and coined it's a phrase that's used quite a bit, especially in this committee, Peace in the Valley, and actually used an acronym for it for the first time and said, we got to get that PITV. I'm like, PITV, Peace in the Valley. So we certainly are optimistic and hope to reach that PITV, and we're certainly working towards it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reynoso. Members, questions? Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Reynoso, I'm sorry if you...
Thank you, Mr. Reynoso.
I had a question for you. Thank you for coming back. I just wondered if you could provide for the committee a copy of one of those collective bargaining agreements. I think it would be helpful for the committee to understand, and I know you and I have had conversations about this as well, because you know, the growlers are not delivered by your members. They're a product that the consumer has to go to the brewery and to the tap room to get. So I think it would be helpful for all of us to understand if you could provide a copy of one of those agreements.
Mr. Reynoso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Loon. You know, there were several inquiries about that last year, and while it's easy to just toss out a collective bargaining agreement, they are complex documents. They are private documents also, and in the fact that nobody, unless you're in the industry itself and you're part of a particular collective bargaining team, so to speak, the collective bargaining agreement is it's sought through a basis of negotiations. And while the general public certainly could read the document, the general public really wouldn't exactly know what the intent of specific language in the document would be. So with all due respect, you know, we negotiate our collective bargaining agreements, and without being part of the collective bargaining group, it's somewhat difficult to understand and decipher what exactly the intent of specific language would be. So while some specific language in a collective bargaining agreement may say one particular thing, they all say something different. But I can assure you that each one of the 17 collective bargaining agreements do have a trigger mechanism in the event that there's a change of Sunday liquor sales.
Thank you, Mr. Reynoso. Representative Loon.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Reynoso. Well, I understand that they may each be a little different and complicated in that, but I think certainly this has been a contention and an issue that I think is of interest to the committee, and we certainly have some very talented and intelligent and well-trained staff that I think could help those of us who are not experts on the collective bargaining process decipher what those agreements are. So again, I would just renew my request. Certainly I would expect that particular names of companies and that would be redacted. I'm not asking for a specific contract on a specific employer, but I think just to get a sense of what those bargaining agreements contain so that we can fully understand your concerns would be helpful.
Mr. Reynoso.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Loon, certainly consider it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions, members? Is there anyone else that wants to speak for or against either one of these bills? Representative Anderson and Swedzinski, do you want to have final comments? Either, I don't care which order you go in.
Just want to thank the committee for reconsidering this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I hope that we can move further on this bill and all bills related to Sunday sales. And I ask that members continue to support this and move it forward.
Nicely done. Thank you both. And with that, we will lay over both House Files 70 and 121 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Liquor Bill. And we will keep going. Which order do you want these in? I'm not sure. Which one is that? Representative Anderson, do you want to, we'll do the House File 1044. Representative Anderson, welcome back. Do you want to go ahead and move 1044 so it is properly before us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 1044 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Liquor Bill.
Sounds good. Do you want to start with testimony, or do you want to bring testifiers up right away?
I would, Mr. Chair, for the folks that could come forward on this, and I'll just briefly describe what the bill does. Here what we're doing is we are allowing for cities to take the option of allocating an additional license to entities within their city limits. This is a bill that's been before the committee in the past. I have a couple testifiers here that would wish to speak to it, and
I'll end it there, Mr. Chair.
Sounds good, Representative Anderson. Go ahead. Welcome back to the committee. Please proceed whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Jamie Poole, and I'm here today. I represent the Minnesota Grocers Association. We're a state trade association that has been representing the industry for over 117 years. We have over 200 retail members with nearly 1,100 stores across the state. We have manufacturer and distributor partners of about 100 as well. We do employ union and non-union employees, about 125,000 Minnesotans. As many of you well know, the grocery store is at the heart of your communities. Minnesota's, as we keep hearing today, Minnesota's food culture is definitely homegrown. We have a strong independent base here with fourth, fifth generation family ownership from each end of the state. They are our lifeblood. They are able to compete in this ever-changing marketplace because they do deliver top-of-the-line service, innovative selections, competitive prices, and consumer choice. Consumer demands continue to drive our opportunities, and all Main Street Minnesota companies deserve more flexibility and fewer restrictions to meet the needs of their customers. House File 1044 addresses an antiquated law that simply limits a company's ability to apply for more than one liquor license within a city. It simply gives liquor store owners a chance to apply for additional available licenses within a jurisdiction. City councils will continue to make liquor decisions locally after doing their due diligence on what is best for their community. This repeal will provide municipalities more control and flexibility to meet the demands of their communities, creating a robust Main Street and an energized marketplace. The bill is very small, but it is significant. It does not change the number of liquor licenses in a city. It does not change the standalone store model, nor does it infringe on the current municipal liquor structure. All it does is provide local governments control and flexibility they need to make positive decisions for their communities while ensuring that each business has a level playing field for meeting the needs of the customers. With that, I'm happy to stand for any questions. I also have a testifier here from the association.
Why don't we go ahead with the second testifier, and then if members have questions, we'll get to that.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Noreen Otto, and I am the Assistant Vice President of Government Relations for Hy-Vee. Hy-Vee has operated in Minnesota since the late 1960s, and we have thousands of employees in the state of Minnesota. We are excited, as we announced early last year, to be entering the Twin Cities market for the first time, and so we know that there is potential for growth in the state of Minnesota. We are excited about that potential, but one of the issues that we do bump into that stymies some of that growth is this municipal limitation. We are supportive of House File 1044 and would ask for your support on it. We work really closely with our city governments on a number of different issues already, everything from construction projects to redevelopment to regulatory concerns to food banks and community gardens. We would like to continue to work in that relationship. This bill simply allows cities to respond to their individual marketplace and the needs of that city's consumer population. We would like, where appropriate and when appropriate, the opportunity to hold more than a single license in a municipality. In particular, we run into this problem in the cities of Mankato and Rochester here in the city or in the state of Minnesota. So I appreciate very much the time to voice our concern and our support for this bill, and we would appreciate your support on the expansion and allow us to compete in the ever-changing marketplace.
Thank you. We also have Mr. Bob Margot. While he's coming, Representative Scott, did you have a question?
I do.
Go ahead,
Mr.
Representative
Chair.
Scott.
More of a comment, really. I'm an Iowa girl, so I love Hy-Vee, and we have some vacant store space in Coon Rapids. Okay, folks, when I moved here, none of the grocery stores around here bag your groceries. Hy-Vee will bag your groceries. In my hometown, they bring them out to your car. Bigger places, you drive through and get them. I love Hy-Vees. I'm so excited that you're coming to the area.
And Mr. Chair, I'll have to admit,
Representative Anderson,
when I was given the option of having either Cub or Hy-Vee come, I knew Representative Scott would appreciate Hy-Vee. So.
It's a lesson for everybody. Always important to do your homework.
Yeah.
Know your audience. Other questions, members? Thank you, Representative Scott. Representative Applebaum, did you have a question?
Are there going to be more testifiers?
I think so. Oh, yes, there are. Mr. Bob Margaret, come on down, sir.
I'll wait till the testimony's
up. And then Mr. Madigan is next. Gentlemen, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please proceed whenever you're ready.
My name is Robert Margaret. I own River Liquor Store in Northeast Minneapolis. Store has been in my family for 69 years. I have been there the last 36. I am the past president of the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association, and I would like to tell you today why I think the proposal to allow multiple licensing is a bad idea and would lead to the eradication of small family-owned mom-and-pop stores like my own. Currently in cities where grocery stores have multiple sites, typically at one of those sites there is a co-located liquor store owned by the grocery store, and there are no other liquor stores close by. At the other grocery stores in the cities, typically there is a liquor store owned by a family that is the right next door or across the parking lot. If this law were allowed to pass over time, I believe these stores would be replaced, disappear, be replaced by corporately owned stores. I am concerned that this law would eventually lead to the long tradition of mom-and-pop stores being completely put out of business. One example that keeps me wondering on this proposed law how it might be embraced by the gas stations. Currently, we think of a gas station, how it has evolved. Most gas stations have become small convenience stores. Many, but not all, sell 3-2 beer. Some independent gas stations have separate entrants where they also sell beer and liquor. My fear is that if passed, chains that have multiple well-suited stores within a city may decide to enter the market because they know they can, on a corporate level, seek entry for all of their stores. Currently, this type of change is concerning to small independent business owners like myself. One of the final reasons also is that in most cities, there is either a defined cap on liquor stores or there isn't a cap in law. There is one that is subtly enforced by city managers. Recently, St. Louis Park decided it had enough liquor stores and refused to grant a license to someone who applied. I am also one of hundreds of small local liquor retailers in Minnesota. We have invested and built our businesses based on the current regulatory model. We have created thousands of jobs for Minnesotans, pay millions of dollars in taxes, and one of the most regulated industry. It's been working well for Minnesota, and I believe that eliminating and chipping away at the smart and balanced three-tier system will threaten the viability of many of our businesses. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Margaret. Mr. Madigan?
Thank you, Chair Hoppe and members. My name is Mike Madigan. I represent the Minnesota Beer Wholesalers Association, and I thank you for the opportunity to share our concerns about House File 1040.
Mr. Madigan? Mr. Madigan, can you slide right or left? I can hear you. Just want to make sure the tape picks it up.
All right. Fair enough. We did have an opportunity this morning to share our concerns with Representative Anderson. MBWA represents all of the family-owned beer distributors in the state of Minnesota, as I think the committee is aware. And the beer business is one of the few remaining businesses in this state that are still dominated by family-owned businesses at the distributor and retail level. All of the distributors, as the prior speaker, all of those retailers and distributors have invested in our current regulatory system and our current regulatory model. As we all recognize, when used responsibly, alcohol enriches our lives, our family functions, and our community events. But when it's used irresponsibly, it has the potential to create great damage to individuals, families, and society as a whole. And as a result, as the committee is well aware, alcohol is one of the most heavily regulated industries in our country. The goal of alcohol regulation is to balance competition, responsible competition, and availability on the one hand with appropriate control on the other. And the goal is to create a stable and orderly alcohol marketplace where responsible and healthy competition can occur with wide availability, but we avoid excessive hyper-competition, excessive sales practices, over-promotion, which can obviously result in a rise of consumption patterns and alcohol abuse. I would submit that Minnesota has struck the appropriate balance. We enjoy unprecedented choice and variety in this state. There were earlier testifiers that talked about the explosion of the craft beer industry in this state. That all occurred under our current regulatory structure, and we are indeed one of the leading states in terms of promoting that segment of the business, which I think is wonderful for our consumers, certainly wonderful for the beer industry. We have nurtured thousands of family-owned businesses in this state at the distribution and retail level who employ tens of thousands of Minnesotans across the state. They're all deeply rooted in their communities, and because they're deeply rooted in their communities, they're very responsible with regard to their sales practices. And because they deal with their neighbors and their friends on a day-to-day basis, they see the effects on a day-to-day basis of irresponsible sales promotion practices. As a result of our balanced alcohol regulations, we have per capita consumption here in the state of Minnesota that is below the national average, and we have alcohol-related accident rates that are substantially below the national average. Lately, we have seen many proposals that would dramatically change our alcohol regulatory system. There are many who would like to see the this industry deregulated for their own economic benefit. MBWA urges the legislature and this committee to be cautious with regard to any regulatory change to make sure that we don't pull a thread that threatens to unravel the entire regulatory fabric. We don't think that would be in the interest of the citizens of Minnesota, and we believe it would ignore the lessons of the past. Last year, the University of Minnesota Division of Epidemiology and Community Health undertook a study of state alcohol control policies in order to judge their effectiveness in addressing alcohol abuse. This was not a study that the industry funded. The industry had nothing to do with this study. In fact, we didn't even know that this study was being undertaken. Specifically, the study analyzed 29 policies, alcohol policies, pertinent to the discussions and the issues that you are dealing with today. The study, the authors of that study, who incidentally are among the most respected scholars in this field in the country, we have some of the best here at the University of Minnesota, believe that among the policies that they found most effective were alcohol density restrictions. They're talking there about the number of retail outlets, the density of outlets, retail price restrictions, and I'll address that in a moment, hours of sales restrictions. They actually cited that in their study as an effective one of the more effective alcohol restrictions, and day of sales restrictions, which I'm not here to address. Under current law, each municipality, as the committee knows, determines the number of retail off-sale licensees that are appropriate for their community. In fairness, the current law provides that a person or company may not hold more than one license in that community. In this way, we fairly allocate the limited licenses that are available to the greatest number of persons. Very large retail chains now seek to pass House File 1044, which would repeal that prohibition and would allow such chains to hold as many licenses as they would like in a community. MBWA opposes this bill for several reasons. First, we do believe it will result in a proliferation of retail licenses, and there is an unquestionable relationship between the availability of alcohol, the density of alcohol, outlets, consumption patterns, and abuse. The recent University of Minnesota study, as well as many, many other studies, document that relationship. Secondly, in the United Kingdom, where there are no license restrictions and frankly, very little regulation, four large retail chains control 80% of all off sales in that country. Four retail chains. As a result, first of all, the citizens of the United Kingdom do not enjoy the unprecedented choice and variety that we enjoy in this country, certainly in this state. And in addition, alcohol by those four very large retail chains is often used as a loss leader and is sold below cost. And that is one of the primary reasons why the United Kingdom is currently suffering from an alcohol epidemic. And incidentally, in the United Kingdom, you can literally buy alcohol 24/7. There are no day restrictions. There are no hour restrictions. And we fear that this bill could lead us down that slippery slope. And then third, there is a fairness issue here. All of the thousands of small retailers scattered across the state invested their resources and their careers in our current regulatory system, which I would submit has served our state very well. If these small family-owned retailers do not have the resources to purchase additional licenses in their community, but the mega retailers do, If 1044 passed, it will tip the level playing field that we currently have decidedly in favor of these very large chains. And it would assist the Walmarts, Costcos, and other mega retailers who already, frankly, enjoy enormous benefits. So for all of these reasons, we oppose this legislation and urge the committee to not pass it.
Thank you, Mr. Madigan. Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this bill does not change the local control aspect at all. The cities themselves will control how many licenses that they put out. It's completely up to them on how many licenses that they put out. This doesn't change that component. In fact, what is happening with current law is that liquor stores have found an end round, a go-around piece on getting this accomplished despite our legislative action. So there are liquor stores out there that have found out, hey, if I register my liquor store under somebody else's name, somebody else in my family, I can get a liquor store, two of them in the same community, and get the license approved from my city. So we are not changing what is happening. People have figured out how to change it. We are actually just responding and trying to fix it to make it more fair and level for everybody else. So for that small liquor store that is competing for somebody else that figured out how to get around the system, they're at a disadvantage right now because of the current law that we have in place. I'm looking to change that to make it transparent and make it more fair for everybody involved. And that's what this bill does.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Anderson, to the Walmart point. And I use Walmart because when they came into Inver Grove, we had a local hardware store that just got crushed. And that nice family is no longer in the hardware business. They just got drastically underpriced for such a period of time. Now, lo and behold, Walmart's prices have drifted up now that the competitor's gone. Under your proposal, let's use Walmart as an example just because I picked on them already. Could they come in and buy and own, let's say there's 8 liquor stores in a community, could they own 7 of those liquor stores?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, in my bill, this doesn't change the fact whether it's Walmart or the family that has, maybe it's a husband and wife and their 2 children are in the business. They've had their family-owned liquor store for generations. Maybe this is the 3rd generation liquor store that they have in place. That mom and dad can say to their children, hey, if you go and register a liquor store, you can go open up a liquor store in the same city, and we don't have to do anything. You don't have to get any legislative approval for it. That's already happening right now. So you could be a small mom-and-pop shop, have your kids go out and open up a shop somewhere else in the community and have that feed into the same liquor store operation. It's already happening. All what we're doing with this bill is making it more transparent and giving a fair level playing field for everybody involved, no matter what the size of their operation is.
So, Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, is your point that Walmart can do it already?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, right now, any business can do this, and it puts those folks that are at a one-shop operation at a disadvantage. So this is changing it to make it more transparent and making it available to anybody that wishes to do it, whether you're MGM or Haskell's or any of those entities.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, I guess I'm missing what you're... The example you gave was of a family growing their business, and I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. My initial question was if Walmart could come in and buy... And you gave me an example of how it's already happening. My real question, very genuinely, is could Walmart come in under your proposal and buy up 7 of the 8 licenses in the community? Is the answer to that yes?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, they would need to get approval from the city to buy up those 7 licenses. The city themselves still holds the control over what licenses that they issue. So this is giving us greater local control.
Representative Atkins.
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, the city then could say, you know what, we don't want Walmart to own 7 licenses. Would they have to have some reason for saying that they didn't want Walmart to own them all? I'm just, now you got my lawyer hat on a little bit, Representative Anderson. I'm thinking if I'm Walmart and I get turned down and they say, how do you...
What's the response on a on potential litigation?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, and I might phone a friend with Mr. McCormick, but right now, as it exists, the city has the control over what licenses they issue. And cities have caps and how many some cities have caps and how many licenses that they issue. So if they have only one license left and Walmart comes in and says, we want that license, they can grant that license to Walmart. If Walmart, if they don't have any licenses left and Walmart comes in and says, we want a license, they can say, no, we are at our cap and you don't get a license.
Yeah. And Mr. Chairman, Representative Atkins, I completely understand that. Let's do what you suggested, and let's go to Mr. McCormick over there in the corner. He wore a bow tie for us and all today. So I'm totally with it on if they reach their cap and they say they don't. But could they, Walmart comes in and they've got, you know, in hand, they've got contracts to buy out 7 of the 8 licensees. Could a city council just simply say, you know, we don't like you, Walmart, and we don't want you owning 7 of these operations? Or would they have to have some legitimate legal basis for turning them away?
Mr. McCormick.
Madam Chair, members, under current law, the provision which is envisioned being repealed in this bill prevents ownership of more than one license by a corporation or an individual. If this was then repealed, then Minnesota law would no longer prevent that kind of ownership. Under Minnesota law 348.509, local government can be more strict than state law allows. Therefore, if a city decided that they wanted to pass an ordinance that reinstated the provisions of Subdivision 3, they could do so. That ordinance would be subject to all of the usual challenges, and there would have to be a public interest that the city would be putting forward for why they're doing this. And as to whether Walmart and their attorneys would fight and win, I don't know.
Thank you, Ms. McCormick. Representative Atkins?
And thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. McCormick. I was just a little town mayor before I got. In fact, my little town mayor was here earlier this morning, or this afternoon, and is still here in Dolan. Well, nice. But I remember our city attorney telling us that, you know, if they cleared the background check, they were awfully hard to turn down. And what I'm afraid, Representative Anderson, happens with your bill is, mm-hmm. if you get, and we keep picking on Walmart, poor Walmart, but they come in and they buy 7 of those entities, I think most cities would be hard-pressed to turn them away. And under the plain four corners language of what your proposed law says, is that that would be allowed to happen. And then I'm kind of afraid that, you know, that local, in our case, it was the hardware store that just got crushed. I think this potentially leads to the obliteration of a lot of mom-and-pop liquor stores that have spent decades building up a family business only to have the rules changed mid-game and their feet ripped out from under them. So I'm deeply concerned about what the bill does, and I don't think that's what your intention is. I'm not suggesting that you're trying to put folks out of business, but I think that's what the bill would do. I have no doubt in my mind that that is what the threat would be to a whole bunch of family businesses across Minnesota if we allowed for this to happen.
Representative Anderson.
And Mr. Chair, I don't think anybody would be shocked that this is not the first time you and I have disagreed on issues that have come before the Commerce Committee. And I disagree with you, Representative Atkins. This is actually already happening. And if we are going to turn a blind eye to the fact that it's already happening and assume that, oh, you know, these shops are going to be protected, I think that we are being naive. I think this gives the local control to the local communities to make these decisions, and that's what I'm advocating for. So,
thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Applebaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, despite what municipal ordinances may say, Representative Anderson, you know, the answer has kind of been danced around here for the last 10 minutes or so, but can you just answer, it seems indisputable to me that this bill provides an avenue for large chains to come in, or I'm sorry, I'll rephrase, this bill, it seems indisputable that this bill provides a legal avenue for chains to come in, buy up all the liquor stores in a given area, and not only drive mom-and-pop small businesses out of business, but also later to jack up the prices once such chains control the entire market. Is that correct?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Applebaum, that's false. Mm-hmm. What you have right now is, as I played out and laid out to you already, we currently have liquor stores, family operations that have multiple liquor stores all under the same family. All of their license information goes to the same address, and they have more than one license in their community. So if you think that you're stopping it by keeping this law in place, you're not. In fact, what you're doing is you're giving less local control to our cities to address this issue. So if you are for less local control, then you'll oppose my bill. But if you're for actually giving local control to your cities, you're going to support this bill.
Representative Applebaum.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, you've mentioned this a few times now. Which liquor stores are you talking about that, in your opinion, are taking advantage of this loophole in the law?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Applebaum, I'd be more than happy to talk to you offline. I do have names of the liquor stores. I don't want to call them out. I don't think that's appropriate.
Representative Applebaum, I think that's probably a wise step, but feel free to connect after this. Representative Applebaum.
Okay, well, you know what? For those of you who don't know, Representative Anderson and I have adjacent House districts. 44A is represented by Representative Anderson, and 44B is the district I proudly represent. And I've consulted with countless constituents in our community, including but not limited to those who own liquor stores, work at liquor stores, serve as vendors for liquor stores, and to the person, they are opposed to this bill. So I ask you, have you spoken to anyone in our community, in your district, locally owned liquor stores, employees, local vendors that support this? And if so, who are those people?
Representative Anderson.
Representative, Mr. Chair, and Representative Applebaum, I have, but again, for the same reasons that I highlighted to the chair, I'm not going to share with you or out these people to you. I don't think that's appropriate. That's not how we do things. But I will tell you that I do have a lot of folks that support this measure. And I'd be happy for you to come with me and talking to some of these folks. Maybe you get a feel for their perspective on this issue. So happy to do that.
I'm sensing a town hall meeting in the making.
There you go.
Representative Applebaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Final thought here, and then I'll let others contribute if they want. But, you know, I just like to clear up something. You mentioned Representative Anderson. You know, you mentioned by name MGM and Haskell's in your argument that this bill would benefit those companies, and I should let you know that I am not afraid to say that I have spoken with not just owners but employees and vendors of those entities who are not in favor of this proposal in any sense. So I just thought the committee should know that local businesses, local liquor stores would be greatly harmed should this legislation pass. That's it.
Thank you, Representative Applebaum. Representative Johnson, and then Representative Scott after that. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Part of the bill that bothers me is the excluding a sentence that says a municipality may not issue more than one off-sale intoxicating liquor license for any one place. So the place, I like having that in law. My neighborhood, for example, we've been in frequent disagreement, to say the least, with City Hall, with the mayor, and so forth on zoning issues, on a variety of issues. So And I know the issue of local control is something we at the legislature often use to back a certain perspective one way or another. I'm concerned with the concentration of liquor stores in the density in certain areas, particularly in areas that I might represent that are more lower in socioeconomic, where that kind of density is going to be a real have a negative impact on neighborhoods. So excluding that kind of language through your bill here is, to me, real problematic. I think there's a purpose that was placed in there, and I would really disagree with the idea of having it removed and just saying that it's local control is not good enough for me, because, like I said, we don't agree with our neighborhood with everything that the city zoning folks come up with.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, if the city wanted to have a density requirement on their licenses that they issue, they can certainly do that, and cities certainly do already. So this bill does not change that.
Representative Johnson.
Well, if I understand it right, it allows, if you had a liquor store in a little shopping plaza, couldn't you put another liquor store right next to it? Am I understanding the effect of the bill correctly?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, what this bill does is it leaves it up to the local city. So if the city themselves, and many cities do, they have a density requirement within their city ordinances, saying that a liquor store can't be within 3/4 of a mile of another liquor store. This bill does not change that.
No, I do understand that. And I know those density rules can be changed, too. So I like the law as it is currently written to protect from that kind of density.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Next, I think we had Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't really have a horse in this race. This bill doesn't really matter to me a whole heck of a lot, but I just want to give an example of local control. There was a Walmart that opened up in Andover last November, and they went to our city council prior to even putting a shovel in the ground and asked if they could have a liquor license, and the city council voted no. They didn't think it was a great idea for people to get booze and diapers at the same place, and we do have the density issue. We have in our ordinance, there is they'll only allow so many liquor stores because of the density. So this may be an issue of putting a little bit of faith in your local unit of government to do the right thing. And in this case, I feel like, you know, the city of Andover made the right call. So,
Representative Anderson, do you want to comment on that? Representative Lunan. Thank you, Representative Scott. Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't think I had a horse in this race until I contacted some city council members in Shakopee, the area that I represent, and the ones that got back to me pointed out that each community is unique, and in Shakopee we actually have two different communities. And the way I looked at this was a little different than you did, Representative Applebaum. Asking the liquor stores if they want this would be like asking me if I want to make it easier to bring some of my competitors into town. I'm going to tell you no. I went to the regulators, the city officials who are going to make these decisions, and ask if this would be a harmful or a helpful tool for them. And because of their unique situation and how they want to develop both areas, and it looks like there's going to be a third area in Shakopee the way it's laid out, that they would have a use for this mechanism for a retailer, like you said. And I appreciate and understand the comment about a potential threat this would be to small family shops. I'm not ignoring that. But in my community, this would be helpful simply because of the uniqueness of our town. And so we're giving this instrument to the local leaders who are going to end up making that decision anyway.
Representative Applebaum, do you want to respond? You don't need to. If you want to, go ahead.
I don't.
Thank you. Who do we have next? Representative Sundin. Thank you, Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a personal story to back up some of the comments that Representative Atkins made. When I moved to Cloquet, Minnesota about 36 years ago, we had six grocery stores in that town. Just a nice little town, one big store and several little ones. Now we have three grocery stores in that town, and two of them are very, very large, and one just a niche little market. It's that hasn't made the community any better whatsoever. When I see the Grocers Association and Hy-Vee people coming in here, you know, I only smell one thing, and it's called a monopoly. I've seen it happen here over the last 36 years, and I really don't know how this would affect liquor sales in that town. We've consistently had about six to eight liquor stores there. We've only lost one, thank God. But we've had individual owners, good family businesses are there, and I can only see where this measure would threaten those businesses. And I need to support my local vendors, and I don't see myself supporting 1044 at all.
Thank you, Representative Sundin. Representative Dean.
Yeah. Quick question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm trying to think of the playing field as a level playing field. And I know that we give local jurisdictions some leeway on certain types of sort of decisions and choices. And right now we have a statute that allows one licensee per jurisdiction. And, you know, I certainly understand Representative Anderson that, you know, there are people that have found ways of sort of getting around this type of requirement. And I guess my question to you or any of the other testifiers is, if we do this and some jurisdictions decide that they're just going to be the wild, wild west, they're going to issue licenses to whoever wants it, whether they want 20 or whether they want two, and I have another jurisdiction that's adjacent to that that is deciding no, that they're not going to do that, doesn't that then create sort of this odd sort of patchwork where, like, you know, you drive to one jurisdiction and you have a choice of 25 stores, whereas another jurisdiction you might only have a choice of one store or another? There's something about it that seems to create the opportunity for some real sort of imbalance of the current system. Could you maybe address that and talk about maybe how that's not likely to happen, or might that even be possible to, you know, come through to fruition?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dean. That happens already. Every city gets to determine, you know, what the licenses that they have, the density that they have. That's all up to local control anyway, so you're not changing that factor. But I'm glad you spoke, because, I mean, Minneapolis, prime example. I would argue that North Minneapolis is very different from South Minneapolis. And to highlight what Representative Lunan pointed out, two very distinct areas of the city of Minneapolis. But if you wanted to have your one mom-and-pop shop in North Minneapolis and then you wanted to put one in South Minneapolis, you would not be able to do that. And it's a pretty large city. Same with the city of St. Paul or any of the suburban districts, or Rochester or St. Cloud or Duluth or any of those. You have a very large populated area that a liquor store would only be able to get one license in the city of Minneapolis. I'm changing that and leaving it up to the local cities to decide.
Representative Dean, Representative Lilly, do you want the last question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mine's more of a, I guess, a quick statement. My family, when I grew up, my mom had her family had a trailer park and motel, a little small business, and then my dad had the side of the family had some newspapers and that sort of stuff. My dad gave that to my brother, so that's. Apparently that turns you into a Republican. I don't know, but
big
anyways,
tent, Representative Lilly,
big tent. So, anyways, a lot of people, you know, I'm sure they all ask you when you're asked to go talk to that school group, why you run for office, why you do what you do. And not too long ago, I was asked to go to North High, and I was there, and they said, well, why, you know, they asked that question, why do you run? And so I go through family. North High, North St. Paul.
Okay.
The real pollers.
For the record, there's pollers. And by the way, Friday night they'll be playing in the sectional basketball championships at 5:45 at McAllister.
Thank you, Representative Dean, I think. Representative Lilly.
No one's really ever liked Minneapolis. So
the House Commerce Committee will not take an official position on that.
So anyways, you know, they at these events, and I know you all do the same thing, they ask you why you run for office. Well, part of the reason for my story is I ran for office because our folks expect us as small business owners to get involved in the community. So I can't think of any of these big liquor stores that I know of, you know, like that World of Wines in Woodbury or wherever it is. I can't think of anybody that's volunteering in the community. I'm sure there is, and I'm sure I'm wrong. I could be corrected, but I can't think of, but I can think of like a couple little liquor stores in East Metro that I know that are ones on the city council, others involved, you know, heavily with the church and on a city council as well. Anyways, so it's hard for me to support the big businesses, I guess, in this case. My bias would lean towards the small business. So thank you. Sorry, that was a...
Don't be sorry, Representative Lilly. Well said. Representative Anderson, we'll give you the last word.
I just ask for your support, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. And with that, we will lay House File 1044 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill. Representative Dabney. And while Representative Dabney is coming down, we like everybody that's in this committee. We always like to have visitors. We have one special visitor here today. Faye Sparks, the committee administrator from the Senate Commerce Committee, is joining us. So always welcome. We like to see you here. Thank you. With that, Representative Dabney, I'll say one other thing. Representative Atkins and Representative Davids, this committee has had a long tradition of putting members' bills that aren't members of this committee first at the front of the agenda. We did not have Representative Dabney first because he had a bill up in another committee. Otherwise, we would have heard his bill ages ago. Just wanted to make that clear. And with that, Representative Dabney, whenever you're ready, feel free to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today, and I appreciate the consideration you gave me in terms of scheduling.
My pleasure. And Representative Dabney, one more thing. I will move House File 520 so that it is properly before the committee.
Thank you, sir. And there should be a 520 DE1 amendment.
It should be a member's package. We have it here. We will go ahead and vote on the DE1 amendment to get it in the shape the author would like it to be in. Those in favor of the DE1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Dabney, please proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, Mr. Chair, the poet once said that good fences make good neighbors. And that may be true, but I don't think fences make good public policy. When they artificially divide the state, advantaging local businesses in one area while disadvantaging the same industry in another area of our state. House File 520, as amended, proposes to take down the artificial fences between wineries in greater Minnesota and those in the metro area. Doing so will support these local small wineries and the growing craft alcohol movement, allowing further development of the emerging craft alcohol tourism industry. Additionally, this bill would remove local artificial fences between different aspects of the existing craft alcohol industry. Less than a mile away, Mr. Chair, these are examples, not treats for the committee.
Representative Dabney will decide that. But thank you for bringing the examples.
Mr. Chair, I don't know what I was thinking. I stand corrected. Mr. Zeitler, my constituent, has a winery in my district. Less than a mile away is a microbrewery. The microbrewery, great place, Harriet Brewing, 3027 Minnehaha Avenue, if you're interested for after committee tonight and before the regents election. All right. They can produce, they can serve, and they can sell. Existing statute doesn't allow Mr. Zeitler to do the same thing less than a mile away. House File 520, as amended, would take down that artificial fence. With me today, Mr. Chair, to talk about their businesses are three small winers? That can't be right.
Vintner.
It didn't occur to me until it came out of my mouth. Let's start with Mr. Zeitler, if we could, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Mr. Zeitler, please proceed. Identify yourself for the record, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Jeff Zeitler of St. Paul, Minnesota. My wife, Keitha Zeitler, is here as well.
and we are craft winemakers. As a matter of fact, all these bottles that you see in front of you, these are all craft wines, two wines, cider, and mead, which all fall under the definition of wine under federal law and under state law as well. These are the products that we'd like to be able to produce in cities or the suburbs or towns or villages within Minnesota and be on the same footing as the farm wineries, which currently enjoy quite a few advantages in terms of their licensure fees and also the products they can produce. And I don't want to get into all that right now. I know some of you may have seen the handout I made up last year, the purple handout, that showed the difference between urban wineries, farm wineries, and then also breweries and distilleries, which have had rules change in the last few years, which make it much easier to start their businesses and produce their products. I was very glad to hear folks earlier talk about how they want to see mom-and-pop businesses develop and small businesses established. I'm Pop. Mama's right here. Just had to pick up the kids from school. We are starting a craft winery, and we would like to be given the same hearing, or I guess listened to in the same way that or have the same concerns expressed about our type of business as is expressed about small family liquor stores. We're not a big business by any means. We are truly starting from the ground up, putting our savings into a foreclosed vacant building on Lake Street in Minneapolis. We've done most of the work ourselves. It's come out of our savings accounts. We've gotten a loan from a local bank in St. Paul. We are doing this from the ground up. We are not MGM Liquors. We are not Anheuser-Busch. We are not any of the big guys. We are small. So what we're asking for is the ability to play on the same playing field as the farm wineries, as the craft breweries, and the others who have come before you before to ask for the same treatment. So we're asking for that now, and if you're wondering what the same treatment means, it's the ability to, like I mentioned earlier, compete on the same ground as the farm wineries, a lower licensing fee, a ability to self-distribute, meaning if the restaurant down the street wants a keg of my cider or a case of my wine, I can put it in the back of our station wagon and drive it down there and pick up the check. Whereas right now, as the law stands, I have to put on a truck to go out to Woodbury, and then it comes back from Woodbury on that same truck to the place just down the street. And to me, that just doesn't make any sense from an economic, from an environmental standpoint. So that's one level of parity we're asking for. We're also asking for when we get larger and we want to use a distributor, which we will at some point, if you allow us to get started, to be able to operate on a, to be able to negotiate with them on a level playing field as well. Because right now, the fact that we're legally required to use them puts us at a great disadvantage when we're trying to negotiate a contract. If you're negotiating a contract with somebody who you don't have a choice not to deal with, that's tough. So we're asking to have some parity in that regard as well. With that, I guess I'd like to yield to Tim Berman. Well,
Mr. Zeitler, hang on. We have a question for you. Sure. Representative Kreisha.
Thank you. And just quickly, what was the last name again?
Zeitler.
Mr. Zeitler. So I have a small winery up in our area, 5 acres. What would this do to help them or change for them? They have it on site and they distribute their own wine.
Mr. Zeitler.
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This wouldn't change anything in the farm winery bill. That would remain unaltered. So, no, nothing would change for the farm wineries whatsoever.
Representative Kreisha.
And just so I'm clear, so nothing would change if it passes or nothing would change if it doesn't pass?
Nothing would change if it passes. And thank you, Representative Danby. Our goal, and something I kind of didn't mention earlier, is to grow the wine industry within the state of Minnesota, similar to what's been done in Oregon and Washington and New York State, where really the pie will expand as there are more producers. You know, to really build the visibility and build the state industry, we need more producers and really a focus on a diversity of products, which I think the Farm Winery Bill did a great thing in creating more wineries in the state. And we don't want to take anything away from that. I think there's definitely a place for agritourism and farm wineries as well as urban wineries, in the same way that, you know, there are bed and breakfasts and there are hotels downtown. And these don't have to be exclusive of one another, in my view.
Thank you, Mr. Zeitler. Representative Kreisha.
And thank you. And just so I'm clear, I'm a little slow. I'm a lot slow. No, there would be no effect, or there would be? I mean, would it be positive or negative for them, or no effect?
Mr. Zeitler.
My belief is it would be positive in growing the statewide wine industry. There would be no change to the law that the farm wineries currently operate under.
Thank you, Mr. Zeitler. Representative Dean, do you have a question for Mr. Zeitler?
Maybe Mr. Zeitler or Representative Dabney can possibly answer this, Mr. Chair.
Fire away.
So I'm sitting here and I'm thinking we're doing all these craft things. So, and this is, again, me being slow and maybe don't know the laws. Right now I'm prohibited from making wine in my bathtub, putting it in a bottle, and walking next door and selling it to my neighbor, correct?
I'm going to defer to
Mr. Zeitler.
for the bathtub part of the question specifically.
As a home winemaker, which I am now, and Tim is, and Amiro is, we can make up to 200 gallons of wine per year and give it away to our friends, family, whoever. We can't sell it. That is correct. We cannot sell it for money. We can give it away, but we cannot sell the products that we make in our basements or bathtubs or wherever.
Okay. Representative Dean.
Just a quick follow-up. So when you get to 201 gallons, what happens?
Mr. Zeitler or anybody?
I haven't tested that limit.
Okay. Mr. Chair, could
Mr.
we phone a friend in Mr. McCormick?
Mr. Chair, members, a home winery that exceeds that limit would have to be licensed as a winery in the state of Minnesota. Under current law, there's two ways to be licensed. One is as a regular wine manufacturer, and secondly, as a farm winery. And in this case, because the testifier does not reside in and operate in land that's zoned agricultural, they would have to be licensed as a winery.
Thank you,
Dean. Mr. Chair.
Representative Dabney, do you want to, whoever wants to go next, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Tim Berman, please.
Berman, excuse me.
Mr. Berman?
Tim Berman, Minneapolis, Minnesota. I'm a cidery in the contemplation phase. That means I haven't done enough of a business plan to change my mind yet. I probably made about 50 gallons of cider last year. That sounds like a lot, but really that's only about a pint per day, and I have to share with my wife. So, as you know, cideries are licensed as wineries. I'm going to give some specific examples of enterprises and people. It doesn't necessarily reflect whether or not they support the bill. I'm just using this as examples because I'm aware of how their enterprise may work. In Northeast Minneapolis, we have Sociable Cider Works. It's actually not a cidery. They're licensed as a brewery because of the way the law is written. And because of that, they have to make their product as beer, which means that they have to have at least 25% of the fermentables have to be either sorghum or malt. So even though they're gluten-free with the sorghum product, their preference would have been to open as a winery, but because of the restrictive nature of that license, they elected to become a brewery instead. We've been calling this bill the craft winery bill, and I think that may be a mistake. I think a more accurate term would be the craft winery fairness bill. Many of the advantages that are allowed for craft breweries, farm wineries, and even distilleries aren't available to people who want to open wineries in areas that aren't classified in zoning as agricultural. All startup wineries need that extra margin that they're able to get from self-distribution. As they grow, then they're able to grow into distribution and that sort of thing, and this bill is simply asking for fairness and equity in that matter. Non-farm wineries must use the three-tier distribution system. They're not allowed ownership of a distributor. And if anybody thinks that there aren't enough obstacles in the way for someone who wants to open a winery, I would recommend looking at the paperwork for the TTV for approval, and also seeing what the difficulty is in raising capital, and as well as lots of other hurdles. I think the numbers reflect the difficulty of opening a non-farm winery. As far as I'm aware, there are only two in the state of Minnesota that are licensed in that capacity. And I believe one of those was originally licensed as a farm winery and then changed it because they wanted to open a second location. I'm going to talk a little bit about cider because that's what I know better. It has a long tradition in the United States. One of our early forefathers was John Adams, and he was reputed to have drunk a tankard of cider before breakfast every day. So there's a long history of it, and in the past, in the early 1800s, 50% of the agricultural land in New Jersey and New York was dedicated to growing apples for cider. And that was until the Prohibition Movement took further hold. I was able to attend the Cider Conference of the United States Association of Cider Makers earlier in February, and there was 700 cider makers from all over the U.S. And Canada and Europe as well. And basically, it's the idea that virtually everyone has is to grow the category. You know, there wasn't heavy competition or anything. Everybody was helping each other out. And there are plenty of examples in other locations, as was mentioned, Portland, where places where companies have started in basements and garages and then grew from there, able to do the self-distribution. For example, Rubber Gnats in Portland had stories about how he used to unplug his dryer and then plug in the 10-foot, 220-volt extension cord. After he opened, he was able to, he was self-distributing for about 4 to 6 months, and then he actually grew enough that he decided he wanted to dedicate more time to making cider and got a distributor. As part of the other presentations at that conference, one of those was Robert Vail from Angry Orchard, which is a division of Boston Beer Company, which is the Sam Adams parent company. Again, even at that size, it was the whole idea was grow the category. And they shared some of the marketing information that they had about the growth of cider. In areas in Portland and Seattle both, cider is 4.3% of the total beer market as opposed to 0.8% elsewhere. So the ability to have locally grown, locally made, locally consumed has really contributed to the growth of the enterprises in those locations. If cider was considered a share of the craft brewing market, it would be about 18 to 20% of the craft brewing market. It would be the second largest style after IPAs. And where that growth comes from is drinkers are trading up from the mass-produced domestic beers. I feel that we should allow Minnesotans to participate more fully in that growth in cider consumption. There will be more cider consumed in Minnesota in the future. And the question really is will that cider be produced in Minnesota or will it be produced elsewhere? And where the cider comes from, I think, is at least partly decided by this bill. This bill is a start, and the idea is to grow the category, and the category is Minnesota grown, Minnesota made, Minnesota consumed.
Thank you, Mr. Berman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And lastly, Emilio Sangiovanni.
Mr. Sangiovanni, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Emilio Sangiovanni, and obviously I'm pro the bill. Let me tell you a little bit about me, who I am and who I am not. I'm an immigrant. I came to the United States directly to Minnesota in 1999. I got a business degree in my home country in business administration, emphasis in accounting. I came directly to Hamline University pursuing a master's degree in management and leadership, and the focus is entrepreneurship. I'm a winemaker by tradition, by heart. I'm Italian, Venezuelan. One of the things that I have found in the wine-making industry here in the state of Minnesota is that it's great. It's wonderful. It has actually taken what the University of Minnesota did with the varieties they created, and it developed an industry. Now, that's the first start of it. The next step, I believe, is to open up the door for small entrants. The one I make is the bottle that is at the end. That is not a $5 bottle of wine, or a $7 or a $15. That's a bottle that will sell easily for $35. I don't need to go and find a place to fill it up with tanks. I just need a couple. My target market is not everybody at the liquor store. It will be people who are wine connoisseurs that will seek this type of craft. And this craft is made with Minnesota grown grapes. The way the conversation goes around when you present somebody with a product that you made with Frontenac or Marquette is that you tell them, they taste it and say it's good. You tell that this is the variety that was made in the University of Minnesota. and then they tell you Minnesota, and then you start talking about the wine industry. What is through the University of Minnesota varieties that were developed. So the wine industry itself is not widely known. As a difference as it is in Oregon, Washington, New York, and California. There has been for the last 5 to 7 years a huge explosion of urban wineries in Oregon in particular, actually Portland, to be more specific. And when you go to those wineries' website and you read the story that they have, they pretty much started like, you know, the mom-and-pop shops, producing their houses, testing the waters, building from it. The amendment to the current legislation will not impact in any way the current farm wineries, because what it does is that it opens up just a little tiny segment of a market that they are not targeting and gives us an in for us to test the water. So my vote obviously is for it to pass, for me to be given the chance to try, just like many other people. 24 hours ago, we started a petition in change.org regarding this bill, and before 2 o'clock or so, we had 62 people sign the petition. So there is a lot of interest. There is a lot of interest. It's a market. It's a new venue for creating revenue to the state of Minnesota. Because whether I become a farmer, who I am not, and if I wanted to start a winery, pretty much this legislation requires me to become a farmer. I'm a winemaker. I'm not a farmer. There is the interest out there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sangiovanni. Members, questions? Sir, come on up if you want to speak. I was just about to ask if there's anybody else that wants to speak for or against the bill. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my name is Luke Zach, and I didn't prepare anything, so I'm sorry if it's a little rambly, but I just wanted to come up here and say that I am, too, at the beginning stages of looking into starting a cidery, which, as you guys know by now, is considered wine for all federal and state purposes. And I also went to the industry-wide cider convention in Chicago at the beginning of February. And a huge part of the reason I went was to hopefully get a better understanding of the legislation and the guidelines that surround our industry. And what I discovered is that there is a lot of inconsistency, and it changes from state to state, and basically nobody knows right now. And so since I came back, I have been doing a lot of research on the statutes and the ordinances that restrict the production of wine. And from what I can tell, it seems like there's a lot of confusion because things have been added in piece by piece along the way. And I think that I would like to just vocalize my support of this bill because it would hopefully clear a lot of the red tape that has held back this industry. And I think with this bill passing, it would ideally make room for an increase in the use of Minnesota-grown agricultural products, and perhaps that the cider industry in this segment here could help that and follow in the footsteps with the booming craft beer industry, like people have said here, and also potentially match the potential that has been seen, as stated earlier, in the likes of Washington and Oregon and New York, where it's taking up a larger part of the industry. So, thank you.
Mr. Zach, nice job. Mr.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Bagnoli. I'm with the McGranchay Carnival Strawn & Lamb Law Firm. I represent the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association, Minnesota Municipal Beverage Association. I'm here today to oppose the changes that are contained within Representative Dabney's bill. When far, and for these reasons. When the Farm Winery Law was established approximately 20 years ago, the concept was brought to the legislature by farmers who suggested that for small agrarian producers, a special exception to the three-tier system should be made. These farmers suggested that for tourist reasons and in order to help diversify the agricultural base, an exception to the three tiers should be made for small producers. Thus, a farm winery can sell their product on site like a bar, and they can also sell bottles of wine like a liquor store. Whenever we evaluate a suggested change of the current system, we consider whether the change would create an unfair advantage. Normally, allowing a producer of the product to also sell it to the public would create that unfair advantage because the producer would not have to pay the wholesale fee that liquor stores that I represent have to pay. However, because of the geographic restriction contained in the legislation, which requires that a farm winery can only be on land zoned agriculture, we were neutral on the exception when it was brought to us. Because we believe that the law would accomplish what the stated reason for the law was, to provide rural tourist destinations and promote Minnesota wineries. The law has largely worked. I know I don't know if in Representative Krisch's your district, if it's a rural destination, but I know Carlos Creek is a destination winery. Cannon Valley Winery is as well. This current request would allow the manufacturer of wine to open up anywhere in the state and sell wine directly to consumers without the geographic restriction that made the original compromise that led to the change a workable solution for all of us. Because this law would contain no restriction on where or how a producer of alcohol could locate and directly and unfairly, in our minds, compete with current retailers, we oppose the legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Bagnoli. Members, any questions? Seeing none, Representative Dabney will give you the final word.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. This committee has a long tradition of opening up opportunities for entrepreneurs in the state. We see that in the craft brewing industry. As Mr. Bagnoli indicated, it's been 20 years of fences around the metro area limiting opportunities for entrepreneurs inside the metro area. Interest in an industry such as craft brewing or craft wineries builds interest for everybody in the industry. We have the opportunity with House File 530 to strengthen the emerging craft winery industry for everyone across the state without threatening the existing wineries that we do have. I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
We will lay House File 520 as amended over for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Representative Dabney.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson, we're on to the final bill of the day. House File 1399. Wait, those are leaving? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I move House File 1359.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Members, what this bill does is this is no different than if you were to walk into Herberger's, you shop for a top, and they didn't carry your size for that top. Herberger's would go and call an adjacent store and tell you where it was available, and you would be able to get that shipped to you. This bill does the same thing for wine, for liquor stores. And that's it in a nutshell. I have Mr. Cooper with me today, Mr. Chair, and he is here to offer testimony as well.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Mr. Cooper, welcome to the committee. Please tell us why we should buy tops. I'm sorry, was that not the gist of it?
You got it. You're done.
Got it. Mr. Cooper, welcome to the committee. Please proceed. Identify yourself for the record and let us know.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name's Edward Cooper. I'm Vice President of Public Affairs and Community Relations for Total Wine and More. I'm here to testify in favor of HF 1399. It's a bill that we believe is narrow in scope and seeks to address a small issue related to inventory balancing. Let me affirm that Total Wine and More supports and adheres to the three-tier system. There's nothing in this bill that would abrogate the longstanding system that facilitates secure and proper liquor distribution in Minnesota. If you'll indulge me for a moment, Mr. Chair, since this is the first time before this committee and our presence in Minnesota is less than 2 years old, I thought I'd tell you a little bit about Total Wine and More, very, very briefly. We entered the state a little less than 2 years ago, four stores. Each of those stores has 50-plus team members employed, local folks employed in our stores, of which 75% of those are part-time, excuse me, full-time, 25% are part-time. That's a little bit different than the industry in general. We invest in our team members, we invest in our staff, look forward to moving them forward in terms of promotion within the company. The Total Wine and More was started 23 years ago in Delaware with one store. It's a family-owned operation owned by two brothers, so I guess it's not a mom and pop, but it's a brother and brother operation. That one store was 1,500 square feet, relatively small. The hard work and dedication of the two brothers and the folks who work with them has grown that into a large retailer of beverage alcohol here in the United States. Briefly explain the problem and why HF 1399 would provide a remedy. We and retailers in this state are all about the customer. Retailers who put the customers first win in the marketplace. And the fact of the matter is that occasionally, because the folks who are ordering wine, and this, I may add, this is only a bill about wine. It's not about beer and spirits. I'll talk about that in a second. But those who order wine are human, and occasionally they make mistakes, as humans are sometimes happen to do. And so, just by way of example, there may be a retailer that has more than one store under common ownership that in one particular location, say Woodbury, has a customer who is looking for a certain type of Merlot, Merlot is good, wants a certain type of Merlot, but that store or that licensee that has more than one store doesn't have the Merlot in that store, and yet they may have it in a store in Roseville. Right now, under current law, retailers cannot transfer that product between those two stores. What we're asking for is the ability to be able to transfer that product between one store and the other. This has been done all around the country. In fact, there's many states, most states, that permit this. I will tell you that there are in the bill summary says that Minnesota liquor laws currently prohibit liquor stores from storing inventory off-site. That is not what this bill is looking to do. This bill is looking to be able to allow retailers to transfer that not to an off-site warehouse. In fact, we'd be opposed to an off-site warehouse. That's really not the desire or intent of that, but really what that is to be able to transfer it back from one like one license and one license premise to another. I will tell you that in other states, there are provisions that allow, mandate that the retailers do it at their own expense. We're fine with that. I imagine that other retailers in the state would be as well. There are other states that that mandate reporting requirements, such as providing here in Minnesota to the AGED and also to the wholesalers. I think that would be fine as well. This bill, as I said, does not permit warehousing. It does not allow one retailer to sell to another retailer, thus violating the three-tier system. So, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, we want to draw attention to HF 1399. It only allows us to do us and other retailers once every 3 months. It's limited in terms of the ability to be able to transfer. And I hope this gives you a sense as to why it is that we're supporting Representative Anderson's bill, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper.
Just one.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and light of the hour. I just have to me, this strikes me as kind of rebalancing the portfolio a little bit.
Yes, sir.
So on its face, I'm going to ask you what I think is the one potential for abuse, which would, and that's why I'm asking this, to give you an opportunity to respond to it, is would this enable you to essentially use your stores then as warehouses so you wouldn't have to warehouse? I'm trying to figure out, Mr. Cooper, something that, you know, if there was somebody that was opposed to this, why would they oppose it?
That's a good question. I don't know why they would oppose it.
I haven't been able to come up with anything. The one closest thing I can get to it is that normally a typical store would have to use a warehouse to off-site to, you know, or somehow figure out how to deal with the product issues. That's the closest I can come. Is this aimed at that in any fashion?
Mr. Cooper. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, you're absolutely right. I don't know why anybody would oppose this. There are stores there that have, ours included, that have storage space to be able to, and we buy just in time. Our inventory is just in time. And so we're a fairly sophisticated retailer. So our inventory is all computerized and just in time. However, the folks who buy it, don't realize at the time that somebody in Woodbury likes the Merlot, but we don't have it there. We've got it in Roseville, and so the ability to be able to move a couple of cases, excuse me, or whatever it may be, from one to another—that's simply what we're asking.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In a previous life, I held a commercial driver's license with a hazmat endorsement, and to even cross a bridge over to Wisconsin or whatnot, I had to maintain that hazmat. I was just wondering the alcohol content in wine, if that rises to the level of hazardous material, and can a person even transport that product, or an employee of the liquor store or whatever, transport that product legally without a hazmat endorsement? Just a question. I don't expect anybody in this room to even know it, an answer. So just a question.
Mr. Cooper?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know the answer to that question, I'm afraid.
Mr. McCormick, do you know?
Madam Chair, members, no. It does not require a hazmat certification. Wine can, and actually distilled liquor can be transported without that certification. It does. There are limits to, for example, under the interstate carrier provision to labeling and to where they can be delivered.
Representative Atkins, has he ever been stumped?
Never. It's like Jeopardy.
It's amazing.
The only thing he doesn't do is phrase it in the form of a question. But other than that.
Is there anybody else who would like to speak in favor or opposed to this bill? Mr. Madigan? Mr. Reynoso? Come on down, gentlemen. Mr. Carlson? Okay, when I said that, I didn't mean everybody. Gentlemen, I don't know whoever would like to go first, please proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members, Joel Carlson on behalf of the Wine and Spirits Wholesale Association. I'll go first, and I'll be brief, and I agree with the comments from the gentleman from Total Wine. We put our customers first, too, and both big and small retailers, and we wanted to hear what the issue was that brought the bill forward. We haven't taken a position on the bill, but we wanted to understand its rationale and how it would be enforced. And as we hear the description of the bill, a customer looking for a particular type of Merlot or the sweater that's not in stock at Her Burgers, that doesn't sound like a once every 3 month kind of activity. That sounds like a little more frequent transfer. And we just want to make sure that what the bill says is what they're trying to accomplish. But we haven't taken a position on it, but appreciate you, the committee, vetting it so that we can learn a little bit more about what is really at stake here. So.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Mr. Madigan?
Thank you, Chair Hoppe. Members of the committee, Mike Madigan representing the Minnesota Beer Wholesalers Association. As currently drafted, we do oppose this bill. It only applies to wine, but we know what happens in the alcohol industry, what happens with one type of alcohol will undoubtedly happen with others. Our concern is as follows, and we're certainly willing to talk and work with the folks that are proposing this bill and Representative Anderson. Under current law, retail-to-retail sales are banned for several reasons. First, in order to ensure complete accountability and transparency with this heavily regulated product, regulators and the Department of Revenue require that suppliers ship to distributors who ship to retailers. Retailers alone have the right to sell to consumers. And at every stage of sale and distribution, The product has to come to rest in the manufacturing facility of the supplier, then come to rest in the warehouse of the distributor, and then come to rest in the store of the retailer. The reason is Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division and the Department of Revenue can audit and inspect the product at any one of those stages, ensure that all alcohol laws are being obeyed, and ensure that all taxes have been collected. This bill is currently drafted because there is no limit on the amount that can be transferred. There's not even a limit as to whether or not it could be transferred to a store within Minnesota as opposed to out of state. And there is no reporting requirement to the Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division or the Department of Revenue has any of those protections. And we know that the resources of the Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division have been significantly stressed, and this would make their job that much more difficult. And I understand in talking with representatives from that division that they have concerns about this bill for that reason. Understand, here is, to answer your question, Representative Atkins, here's how such a bill, how a loophole could be exposed, and I'm not certainly suggesting that Representative Anderson intended this or even that it was the intent of the prior proponent from Total Wine, but if product was ordered by one store, they could take advantage of, for instance, volume discounts, very, very deep volume discounts if they were buying for a network of stores. That product could be stored at that store if they had the capacity, with no intent to sell it at that store, but rather to transfer it out to their different outlets throughout the state. They would enjoy then a tremendous cost advantage that other retailers wouldn't have, and it would have the potential of destabilizing that orderly market that I think we want to maintain in this industry. And again, I don't think that that's the intent, obviously, of this bill. But I do think some more work needs to be done in order to satisfy those concerns, particularly as articulated by the Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division.
Thank you, Mr. Madigan. Mr. Reynoso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I couldn't agree with Mr. Madigan more. The reality is that this is nothing short of potential self-distribution. No doubt about it. You know, I'll give you a quick example how Costco started. Costco was a warehouse. That's why it's called Costco Warehouse. They decided that they were going to offset some of their costs by selling out the front door. And they get their products at a huge discount. And this is precisely what could potentially happen. So we believe, I disagree with Mr. Cooper, in that we believe it's a huge threat to the three-tier system. And to complicate things even more, under primary source, a liquor store owner could go to another state, purchase products from another state and warehouse it and self-distribute that after he or she has decided to self-distribute. So, I mean, there's some big concerns the way this is written now, and we certainly oppose it in its present form.
Thank you, Mr. Reynoso. Representative Anderson?
Mr. Chair, to Mr. Reynoso's comments, I'd like some help from Mr. McCormick. I don't believe that they would be able to go to another state and get the supplies from another state and have it brought in. As I understand it, this would be for just those that own a liquor license here in the state of Minnesota. But if he wants to comment to that, but that's not my intent either, quite honestly.
Mr. McCormick?
Madam Chair, members, there's nothing in the provision that has been drafted that goes to where the wine is coming from. And so lacking that kind of provision, then existing Minnesota law would determine where wine could be purchased by one of these stores. Under existing Minnesota law, there is a requirement that it come to rest at a Minnesota wholesaler. And so my understanding of the law, and I haven't done a great deal of thought about this, is that they would have to purchase their wine at a Minnesota wholesaler still.
And thank
you, Mr. McCormick. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. McCormick. Excuse me. And again, it's not my intent. The language is narrowly drafted that this is not going to be a situation where stores are going to be warehousing it. As Mr. Cooper pointed out, that is not the intent at all. That's why it's, you know, once in a 3-month period that this would be allowed. And overall, on all of these bills, this is about the consumers and making it easier for consumers. As you heard from the moms that came here about the challenges that they face, about making their trip to the liquor store. You only want to make it a one-stop shop. And the more challenging you make it for the moms and pops out there to be able to purchase these products from our Minnesota businesses, it's just another thing that they have to worry about. And so we heard that from the women that testified earlier here today, and that's my motivation on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question that's kind of been on my mind a little bit during this conversation. Is there a current method for liquor to be transferred between liquor stores now?
Representative Anderson?
Mr. Chair and Mr. McCormick could probably weigh in on this better, but as I understand it, they cannot do this. Without this bill, they would not be able to transfer.
So, Representative Swedzinski, I think what happens now is if it went to one store and they needed to transfer a case of Merlot, it would have to go back to the distributor. And I'm not sure if it has to stay there for a length of time or not before it would then be taken by a truck out to another store. And Mr. Madigan or Mr. Reynoso or...
And Mr. Chair, I don't think that they can actually get it to the consumer that way either. The consumer themselves then would have to call that store or go to that store and get it. The liquor store themselves would not be able to do it directly. The actual consumer themselves has to do the legwork to get it all taken care of.
You good? Any other questions, members? Mr. Madigan, do you see no other questions? Is there anyone? We have the room till 6, so we've got time here. Anybody else want to speak for or against this bill? Seeing nobody coming down, House File 1399 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill. Thank you to everybody for sticking around. Thank you to all the testifiers, Mr. McCormick, Mr. Clayman. Thank you. Everybody, members, we appreciate it. With that, members, we are adjourned.